Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 163 of CJ Evolution. Pat Fitzgibbons here, host and creator of the show. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're at, thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. Without you, the supporter, we would not continue to grow and gain popularity. So thank you so much for sharing it with your family and friends, and again, the continued support. A special thanks and shout out to all the brave men and women serving in the criminal justice field, protecting us day in and day out in a very difficult environment. Thank you so much for what you do. I am very excited. I have Pamela Samuels Young on the show. If you don't know who she is, you need to learn who she is because she is amazing. She's an accomplished author and attorney. She's a graduate of UC Berkeley School of Law. She has a bachelor's degree in journalism from USC and a master's degree in broadcasting from Northwestern University School of Journalism. She's a frequent speaker on a variety of topics, including fiction writing and pursuing your passion. We cover a lot of topics in this interview, some of them somber, but most of it positive. So I give you the one, the only, Pamela Samuels Young. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have author and attorney Pamela Samuels Young on the show. Welcome, Pamela. Thanks for being
here. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so excited that you're here because you're so accomplished. You're doing so much good things out there, and I didn't give you justice by that short intro I just gave. Can you tell the listeners a little bit more about you?
Well, I am an attorney, but about a year and a half ago, I retired from the practice of law to write full time. That is, I'm pursuing my passion. I spent the last 15 years of my legal career as a managing counsel for labor and employment law with Toyota. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I practiced law for about 26 years altogether. Prior to law school was my second career. I was a television news writer, and now I'm in my third career as a novelist of legal thrillers and mysteries, and I'm just having a ball.
That is awesome. And, you know, what made you – well, let me back up because, you know, shifting from, you know, you're probably making a ton of money as a corporate attorney, and, you know, what shifted? What drove you to start writing, for one?
Well, you know, I started writing or thinking about writing a novel. I was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years out of law school. Mm-hmm. And I loved reading legal thrillers. I love John Grisham. I love many of the mysteries. But I never saw anybody in those books who looked like me. I never saw any attorneys who were women, mm-hmm. or attorneys in the books who were African-American. And I said, you know, hey, one day I'm going to write a legal thriller. And I got up early one morning and I decided to write this novel based on a case that I'd been working on. And without question, I discovered my passion.
Yeah.
Because nothing else could explain the desire to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to write and write on weekends and write at night and write in coffee shops and write on airplanes. And it just kind of found me that way.
And you know what I like about that, Pamela, and you know this, is that, I mean, I'm sure it was a very lucrative job. You were making probably good money, and you followed your passion. And that's what's important. Is I don't think money matters that much as long as you're following what you want to do.
Exactly.
In your dreams. So I don't want to make it about money, and you know that, and that's what's important for people is, and you probably know many people out there, Pamela, I know I do, that just follow the money, and
right.
You know, money's not going to make you happy. It's about what you're doing in life.
That is so true, and because, you know, I kept saying, I'm going to leave now, and then finally, you know what, I'm not getting any younger, so if I'm really going to pursue this thing full time, now's the time. I mean, I wrote 8 novels while I was practicing law.
Yeah.
That was a lot of double duty.
Wow. I mean, and I want to talk about the books in a little bit. What was the desire? What made you go to law school? I mean, because that's a huge commitment. I know people that have gone to law school, and you went to Berkeley, which is, I mean, that's a top law school. I mean, what made you go there? I mean, not Berkeley, but just made you go to law school?
Right. And I got to tell you that when I finished undergrad, I thought about law school, mm-hmm. and I got to tell you that the thought was just so intimidating to me. It's like I didn't know any lawyers, and lawyers were obviously smart people, and I wasn't and I didn't think I could do it. Now let's flash forward till I'm, 28, 29 years old, and I'm having a real bad day in the newsroom. Yeah. And I used to love writing all of those. You love watching all those shows like the L.A. Law and The
sure.
Practice, and
yeah.
and sit there and dream about doing it. And one day I just had a real bad day in the newsroom. The tape didn't come up. The story didn't get on time. Somebody yeah. yelled at me, and I said, you know what? It's time.
Yeah.
I actually, so it was a second career. It was funny. It just and everything just fell into place. I had like only a couple months to take the law school admissions test before the end of the year, and that following September I was enrolled in law school.
That is
and
awesome.
It's something I like to say about myself that if I'm miserable, I will be miserable for a while, and then I'll do something about it.
Yeah.
So I was getting really a newsroom is a great place for a young person, and I was getting really really burnt out. And
yeah.
I can still remember myself picking up the phone and calling. But we're talking about what 87. We're talking about pre internet when I couldn't look it up on the internet. What I called my USC where I went to undergrad, and somebody put me in touch with what do I need to do to go to law school, and what law school admissions test, and this, that, and the other. And next thing you know, I applied, and I'm there. I celebrated my 30th birthday, my
wow.
first year of law school.
That is amazing.
And it ended up being a wonderful, you know, my legal career and my being a television news writer, because I write fast, I write under the gun, mm-hmm. was a perfect combination to be a mystery writer, because
yeah.
I have the legal side of the stories, and I write really fast.
Yeah.
So you
exactly.
combine those two, and it just worked out.
And law school is very tough. I mean, I'm speaking to the choir. I mean, so but you had a support network, I'm assuming. You had people around you telling you could do it, right? I mean,
Yep, I did. You know, and I'm kind of a self-motivated person.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are some people who were saying, "Well, you have that great job at KCBS TV, why would you dare leave that job?" And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, it's not like I'm running off to, you know, gamble. I'm going to law school. I mean, I'll do some other things. And I will have to say there was one family member who shall remain nameless who said, and I'll never forget it, because, you know, they said, because I have a master's degree in broadcasting. I have an uh-huh, undergraduate uh-huh. degree. She says, well, you got to go to law school now. You should work on your MRS degree first.
Uh-huh.
And meaning get married. And
oh.
I thought, I can get married and I can go to law school. Okay. So, I mean, I was always one who very, very, very directed and goal centered, and figured I could do both. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and you know this, Pamela. I mean, it's interesting because it seems like sometimes, I'm not saying that particular family member of yours was kind of holding you back or kind of being negative, but. You know, I've had people in my life saying, well, you and I think everybody does to some degree.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're family members, and it's hard because family members are like, oh, you can't do that. And I don't think they do it. They don't come. They're not coming from a place of, you know, maybe being malicious or anything. I don't know. Maybe sometimes they are, but they just don't get it. They just don't get it.
It's their own fears.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Their own fears.
Exactly.
They have the fears, and they don't see how you can do it. Then
yeah.
when you do it, they're like, oh, you're amazing.
Yeah.
But they can be amazing too. But yeah. You have to push past the fear. And not that I didn't have fear, not that I was scared, not that I think, oh my God, what if I flunk out? What if I don't pass the bar? What if I had all those fears? But you walk right through them.
Well, and fear, it
it's a great motivator.
Oh, it's a great motivator. And then once you, I mean, I don't think anybody who's ever been successful, you're very successful. Anybody who's successful out there hasn't faced some sort of fear or failure.
And that's what people don't understand, that, mm-hmm. you know, they see people who are rich today, and they think it's just like just snap their fingers and
yeah.
got there. There
no.
were a lot of missteps there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can tell people my best quality is I know how to get back up after a fall.
Well,
there are a lot of people who are scared to fall, but I know how to get back up. I'll lick my wounds and I'll cry about it, and then I'll move on.
Well, where did you learn that from, Pamela? I mean, you had to have people around you, you know.
You know, I like to think, you know, my parents are two very just hardworking people. I mean, I like to say I got my work ethic from my father. My mm-hmm. my first book was dedicated to my parents, and mm-hmm. and the inscription read, to my father who taught me that hard work always pays off, and to mm-hmm. my mom who taught me the power of prayer.
Yeah.
And I think with those two traits, you just can't go wrong.
That's
and I just that's just been my life model.
Well, hats off to you. You have many books out there. You're an accomplished author. We hit on that a little bit. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about your work and some advice to aspiring authors?
I have two series. They're both in the legal thriller genre. They're about lawyers. I mean, they say write what you know, so I started writing what I know. The first series is the Vernetta Henderson series, and she's a lawyer at a large corporate law firm, and I just follow her through several experiences. My books, I like to say I write mysteries that matter, because I always tackle something, be it sexual harassment, be it sex trafficking. And I have another series, the Dre Thomas series, and the last book in that series, Abuse of Discretion, deals with the teen sexting epidemic. Yeah. And that people really aren't aware of, and so I like to wrap the book around something significant, some social issue. And I didn't mean to do that. I mean, I didn't set out to do that. It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
And I like to tell people, if you haven't learned something you didn't know from reading one of my books, then I failed.
Yeah.
And you mentioned what would I say to aspiring authors? A couple things. One. Ignore the naysayers. You can, you know, just go for it. Mm-hmm. Don't give up. And then master your craft. A lot of people want to write, but they don't want to put in the work to learn the things they need to do to write. Mm-hmm. You have the internet. You can learn anything you want on the internet. But just master your craft. Work at it. Practice. Mm-hmm. Do it over and over again. Read it and let people read it. If they say it sucks, then there's a reason it sucks, and start over.
Yeah, start over.
Because if everybody thinks it sucks, it sucks.
Yeah.
Okay? So.
And is it easy? I mean, you're the expert, Pamela. I mean, is it easier now to publish a book? Like, you can self-publish now? I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it a little bit easier?
It is so incredibly easy. It's shocking.
Yeah.
My first two books were traditionally published. My last publisher was Harlequin. Mm-hmm. And after that, my third book was turned down by 9 publishing houses.
Wow.
And I was stunned and depressed. And
I grudgingly
self-published with the goal of getting a book deal.
Yeah.
So I was going to sell enough of my own and then get a book deal. And lo and behold, the first one I self-published, even though it had some moderate success, still didn't get picked up. And it wasn't until really watching the NAACP Image Awards one evening and Tyler Perry saying the words, "You don't have to wait for someone to greenlight your project. You can create your own intersection."
I love that.
And it really stopped me in my tracks, and I rewound the TV, and I listened to it again. We don't have to wait for someone to greenlight our project.
Yeah.
We can create our own intersections. And I began to embrace being a self-published author, and Amazon has made it so incredibly easy. And I've done fairly well, so well, in fact, that it tickles me pink that in the last couple of years, I've had 2 publishers who previously rejected me, 2 major publishers, try to solicit me.
Oh,
like,
because
no, thank you. There's no reason now for me to take my whole inventory and hand it over to you.
Exactly.
I can finish a novel just doing it in WordPerfect or Scrivener. I have somebody who formats it for me for a couple hundred bucks. Once I have that, I can upload that to Amazon. The Kindle version will be on sale in 48 hours, and I will have a book in my hand in 4 days.
That's amazing.
The audio book will, and I found, select a not narrator. The audio book can be on sale in about 10 days to 2 weeks.
Wow.
You can't. Why would I? And I'm getting 70% of my proceeds from Amazon. So why would I hand that over to a publisher for 20%?
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. Amazon and on my books are. Amazon owns the Audio Creation Exchange, my audiobook publishing company, CreateSpace, the print book, and the Kindle, the ebook. So it's a simple platform and easy to do. As a matter of fact, I'm working on doing an online course on this to sort of walk people through
it. Yeah, I was going to
tell
you.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you got so much to share with people, and you could really, to tell people and how to do this. I mean,
I could. I can do it.
I would sign up for it, Pamela, because I need to learn how to do this.
Well, I will definitely let you know. I can do it blindfolded.
And you mentioned the NAACP, and just a plug for you. You won an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Fiction and was a top 10 pick by In the Margins, the best books for at-risk teens. So congratulations on that.
And Yes, and as a self-published author, to have been, and as a matter of fact, I almost didn't submit the book for the contest because my publicist was like, no, you submit it. It's like, no, I'm self-published, so never pick me.
Yeah.
And it turned out when I got nominated, I thought that was just wonderful enough. But to win that book against people like, Walter Mosley was the competition, Terry McMillan, these are all New York Times bestsellers, Sister Soldier, and it was just really validation that I had made.
You made the right move.
Do you ever
regret leaving the? I mean, this is probably a stupid question. Do you ever regret leaving, you know, the law world?
Absolutely not. I was just talking to a friend today that it's so less stressful.
Yeah.
And there was a period about a month ago when I really wasn't writing as diligently. I was just like binge watching TV, and I had a nightmare, and I woke up, and my books weren't selling. I'd gone through all my money, and I had to go back to practicing law, and I woke up in a cold sweat. Okay, this is a sign, God. Okay, I've been writing. I've been back to my routine of writing, getting up in the morning and writing regularly now. I do not want to practice law again. I'm really glad for the knowledge that I've gained and that expertise, but it can be pretty stressful. I wish I had the money, but it can be pretty stressful, but I love creating stories and doing what I do.
And that is what it really boils down to. I want to kind of shift topics a little bit to kind of a somber topic. You talk a lot about various issues. You speak a lot about sex trafficking. You know, how big, I mean, I know I have an idea of how big the issue is, but for listeners out there, Pamela, I mean, how big is the problem out there with sex trafficking?
You know, it's far bigger than people recognize. And I tell people, if your kid has a cell phone, the predator has access to your child.
Yeah.
People don't understand that these guys aren't looking for kids outside schools. They're looking for them on Facebook and on Snapchat. Yeah. And they're communicating with our children, and they're sending them off to go meet, and a kid may sneak off, think they're meeting another 13-year-old, and they're actually meeting being snatched. I mean, I have a close friend whose niece met some guy on Craigslist who sent her a ticket, and she got on a plane to Miami.
Jeez.
So, I mean, you have to, it's a different world. I tell people, it's not the world I grew up in. I grew up with watching Lucy and Ricky Ricardo sleep in separate beds and our kids don't watch 5 minutes of TV.
Yeah.
Without some sexual innuendo, and so it's a different world, and they don't have. I was a latchkey kid. Sometimes they come home and wait for a parent. You know, they don't have the same fears. They think everybody's just meet and greet, and everything's one big happy family, and that's why these predators are able to prey on our children. And I think what parents need to do, you need to be aware of what your kids are doing online. You're not going to know everything. I mean, our parents didn't know everything I was doing. But you have to have open communications, and you have to be technologically savvy. If I meet one more 50 or 60-year-old saying, oh, I don't understand that, well, you need to learn to understand it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because these predators, they're not playing. They're selling our children like drugs.
Yeah. And it is a big problem. You know, like I said, being in law enforcement, I see it. You've seen it. On your end, you lecture about it, and I agree with you. I don't think it's rocket science, Pamela. I mean, I think parents, I think adults, guardians, whoever, they need to be much more cognizant, aware, like you said, educate themselves, and ask those tough questions of their kids.
Yeah.
And I've done it before with my kids. I'm like, what are you doing? Where are you going? And I think some parents, maybe they just don't care, or they're preoccupied, but I don't think it's that difficult. You know, with all the technology we have out there, I don't think it's that difficult to be more involved. And, you know, it's a busy world out there. You know that. But I think as parents and I get it, we're all busy, but we need to be more involved. And that's half the battle, if you ask me.
Yep. Keep those lines of communications open. Know what your kids are doing.
Yeah, exactly. And they got apps and all kinds of other stuff you can track your kids.
Yep. You can monitor. Like, you can see what they're doing on their phones. Use them.
Yeah, like you said. I mean, when I was growing up, I mean, we didn't have any of this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, it was a little bit easier. So, all right, on to more happier stuff. You were such an inspiration. You go and you lecture and you talk to people about chasing after their passion and dreams. I mean, you talk about goal setting. I'm a big goal setting person. I mean, how important is goals? in setting those goals?
Oh my God! And, you know, it's not just important to set them. It's important to set them, to write them down.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to achieve? Because one of the things I like to do is at the end of the year, here we go on New Year's Eve, I like to write down what I want to achieve for the next year and then look at it. I'm curious. I'm not gonna do it until New Year's Eve to look at what I wrote last New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I write both big kind of concept goals and I wrote specific goals. Mm-hmm. I want to sell X number of books.
Yeah.
I want to write 2 books this year. I want to do this, that, and the other. And I, you know, I'm in my office right now. I have like the little sayings. I have this little saying. One says, "Dreams don't work unless you do."
I like that.
And the other one says, "Discipline determines your destiny, not your desires."
Wow, I like both of those.
And so I think it's important to you know, we spend time planning and parties and doing everything else, but we don't plan those things and those dreams of ours.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just happen overnight.
Yeah.
What is it going to take to get where you want to go? And I think, you know, in this internet, in this social media and YouTube generation, people are, I mean, so many millennials who think they're going to be rich because another millennial got a gazillion hits on their YouTube channel and got discovered, but it's a lot of work.
Sure.
And they don't see the part. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
Dreams don't work unless you do.
Yeah, I like that. And I like what you said too, Pamela, about writing your goals down, because, you know, there's something happens when you write something down. Because you see it, you visualize it.
Yep.
Because if we just keep it in our heads, and you know this, it's going to disappear and we'll forget about it. I mean, I journal. I try to journal every day when I get up. You know, I meditate,
mm-hmm.
I journal, and I'm like, okay, this is what I want to accomplish today. You know, start with the micro, then go to the macro, like you were talking about. But I think it's very important to write down goals.
Absolutely. I remember when I was writing books, I would want to write either 1 or 2,000 words a day, which is about 2,000 words is about 10 pages. And I would write it in a post-it note and put it on the mirror. So when I got up in the morning, I'm getting brushing my teeth. I see that. And when I come home, you know, I see that and I sit down, you know, so do whatever it is it takes to spur you on.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what motivates you and use those things. And those little post-it notes reminded me, this is my goal today. Let's get it done.
Yeah. And how important do you think, we hit on this a little bit earlier, and I talk about this a lot. I think it's so important. You know, I always say, this isn't my saying, I can't remember who I got this from. You're the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with. And I think if you're around those negative people and those toxic people, I think it makes it that much harder, Pamela. I mean, you have to surround yourself with the people that are going to lift you up, not bring you down.
That is so true. I have such amazing friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I'm the slug of the group.
Yeah.
I mean, I have friends who are doing so many amazing things and who are uplifting.
Well, you are too. You're doing amazing things.
And they're secure enough in who they are that they want me to be lifted as much as they want themselves to be lifted. And that's what's important. Because a lot of times you'll have friends who, people around you who, you know, they're only happy if you're down here and they're
exactly,
up there.
Exactly, exactly.
Those aren't the people you want. Those aren't friends.
No, I agree with you 100%. You talk about the power to act a lot when you're out there lecturing and you're giving speech. I mean, how do you instill that in people? Because, you know, you can talk about it, and I've struggled with this, you know, having kids sometimes. How do you instill that? I mean, it's intrinsic, right? You can't make somebody, you know, do that.
You know, I use ACT as an acronym, and the A in ACT stands for acknowledge your power. A lot of times we're always thinking we're not enough. If I do this, I'll do this, but blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your power? I have a friend who's like just an incredible friend to people. She's an incredible uplifter. That's your power.
Mm-hmm.
Know what your power is. So the A and X stands for acknowledge your power. What's your best trait? What's your best quality? I know my best quality is the ability to get back up after a fall.
Sure.
And I am persistent. I am like a dog with a bone. I am not letting go until I get there. You
like
can slap me down 10 times. I'm going to get up 11 times. And then the C in ACT stands for commit to change. There are things we need to do to improve ourselves. There are things we need to do. People, change is hard for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, look at what do you need to change?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to change? And consider that. And the And the T in ACT stands for take charge of your future.
Yeah.
You're not, don't wait for somebody else. Sit down and write those goals. I don't care if you're writing those same goals for the next 5 years. Write them. Pick five things you're going to do this week that'll bring you a step closer. It may be a baby step,
yeah,
because maybe you're working a job and you can't leave that job yet. But there's so many resources. Oh, my God, this internet is just so incredibly wonderful.
Yeah.
I remember when I first started writing, I tend to write about a lot of places in L.A. At the end of the book, I need to go to those places and make sure I've described everything right. Now I just go to Google Earth and look at it on the computer.
Yeah.
I mean, the internet has everything for you. So there's no excuse for not understanding something or knowing something because it's at your fingertips.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to do the work. Dreams don't work unless you do. People want it, but do you want to work for it is the question.
Yeah.
You have to work for it.
Now, you've dealt with this next question a lot, I'm sure, in your life. I know I have. What's the blueprint for a work-life balance?
First, it's taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if you don't take care of yourself, I mean, exercise, eating well, yoga. I've started this hot yoga class.
How do you like that?
I really like it. I can't keep up with the youngsters, but the heat and the stretching, and when I'm done, I just feel so refreshed.
Yeah.
And work is going to be work. Sometimes work is going to be overbearing. It just is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I practice law. There's sometimes that you are there till 10 o'clock at night and there's nothing. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But when you get that break, treat yourself. Meditation. I also journal.
Yeah.
My prayer life is important to me. But I know so many people who are just going. They're not taking care of the personal side. And then they are enjoying friends and family.
Yeah.
Your kids aren't, these kids grow up so fast, you can blink and miss them.
Yeah.
So you have to, plan that life part is the same way you plan the work part. And many people think the work part is going to be there, or they're working they're living to work instead of working to live.
Yeah. I don't think anybody.
You just have to find a way.
I don't think anybody gets on their deathbed and says, you know what, I should have spent more time at work.
Absolutely.
That is true. I think what people do is say they regret, if they didn't spend that quality time making those connections with family and friends. And yeah, I think that's really, really, really important. You've hit a little bit, Pamela, on the power of faith. I mean, I know it's important to you. How important, and it's important to me too, can you talk about that?
Oh God, I'm so grateful to my parents who raised me in faith. My mother has been a member of the same church for like over 60 years.
Wow.
So that's commitment. But because even as a kid being raised in my parents are Baptists, and being raised in a Baptist church, you go to church and you love God, as an adult, you have that faith to rely on. I've had colleagues who don't have a faith life, and what do you do when it gets to be too much?
Yeah,
because it's my faith that always brings me back centered. Last New Year's Eve, I decided that I wanted to not go out and party. I stayed home and I lit some candles and I meditated and I prayed through the evening. And earlier that day, I did something I thought I'd never do. I got a tattoo, a very small one.
I love it. I like tattoos.
It's about a fourth of an inch high and about 2 inches wide, and it's on my wrist, and it's my favorite Bible verse. Bible verse is Psalms 46:10, and it's be still and know that I am God. But
that's
my tattoo just says, be still and know ... And there are times when I look at, and the guy was putting it the other way so that if you come at me, you can read. It's like, no, turn it around. This is for me to read.
Yeah.
This is for me to look at it when
that's
I'm
awesome.
Having one of those days and say, just be still and know. And that has got me through so many times.
That is awesome. Now, I always ask successful people like you, Pamela. I've come to realize that most successful people have morning routines that start them out. What is your morning routine? What gets you going every day?
First, I make the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually coffee and toast while I read something spiritual.
Yeah.
I write an affirmation in my journal, And I also write something that is I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
And then I sit down at that desk and I try to write.
Yeah.
And I try to write for at least 4 hours. That's what I like to be my minimum. There are times when I write much longer than that.
Yeah.
I think when I first quit practicing law and writing full time, I was trying to force it and it just wouldn't go. And I just finally, I just stopped, didn't do anything for several months. And then finally my rhythm came back to me.
Yeah.
But that's usually my rhythm. And around noon, I'll take a break for lunch. And if it's still flowing, I'll write some more.
Yeah.
And I do take a day off to maybe on a Friday just to hang out with friends, drop by my parents or just do something fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it's and it's all awesome. And one of the things I really love about that, Pamela, is that you're grateful. I don't care how crappy anybody's life is. I think we all have something to be grateful, you know, every day for, if at the very least waking up and being alive.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, that you have to be grateful. So, I mean, it's just amazing. Pamela, how can listeners reach out to you? And more importantly, how can they find your great works?
You can reach out to me and also read an excerpt of my books at my website, and it's www.PamelaSamuelsYoung.com. You can also email me through my website at www.PamelaSamuelsYoung.com. My books are on Audible and in Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and that's it.
any final thoughts, any words of wisdom from you, Pamela?
Don't be afraid to dream big.
I like that.
I think I meet so many people who just, dream big.
Yeah.
You only have one life.
You only have one life.
Exactly. I'm going to hit the New York Times bestsellers list.
I know you
before
will.
I die.
I know
I'm going to. It's going to happen. I'm dreaming big.
We're going to help you get there. Pamela Samuels Young, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. Keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you so much.
All right, Pamela. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.